Welcome, everybody, to Grow. Maybe you're joining us live, maybe you're joining us later, but we're so happy that you're joining us tonight, or later on, regardless. Grow is a space, it's a learning community that we create space for dialogue about important realities within our culture. And we are on a wonderful journey with our friend Luke, actually, called We Are Kwantlen. And maybe let me give a little context behind what we're doing tonight, and then we're going to hear from Luke for the majority of our time. Really, what we're aiming to do together, I think, is to continue to open up dialogue and build bridges one to the other, specifically when it comes to understanding the realities of our local history. And for Living Waters, that really means taking a position of listening and learning. And we're so thankful to Luke, who is willing to spend time and energy to share and for us to take a posture of listening and learning. Because I think we fundamentally believe that if we're ever to get towards a sense of further togetherness, healing, and restoration, it starts with listening to each other. And particularly as a church, we feel it's important to practice what listening looks like, especially when it comes to listening to voices, communities, and peoples whose voices have been marginalized, shut down, and silenced. And so we're always endeavoring to discover how can we find a place of listening and to create room to listen to voices that haven't been listened to before and to benefit from that really together. And so we are really just, I think, in some ways enjoying discovering together what this journey needs to look like. And I think I speak for many people in our community, Luke, when I say how thankful we are that you're willing to build bridges together, in a sense, and the benefit of the doubt that you continually give our community, the fact that you're willing to lean in and discover ways forward together, because we're never going to move forward together and grow and heal unless people are willing just to sit down, at least to start talking and listening to each other. So thank you for doing that. So we have a commitment over the next year to continue to sit down with Luke and to learn about Kwantlen history, culture, and to learn about all of our places and realities in connection to that. So before Christmas, we had our first sit down as we looked at the seven traditional laws, and we talked about generations. And tonight, we're going to talk about health. And I think one thing I learned last time as we talked together and as I listened to you was obviously how all of these laws, history, culture, so much are interplaying with one another. And I'm excited today to talk about health and to hear Kwantlen perspectives on health and history on health, especially as today is actually a day where our province is speaking about mental health. And we didn't necessarily plan that.
Maybe we did not.
Maybe somebody did, but I think that
my subconscious did.
Your subconscious did, right? Because I asked, "What should we talk about on this date?" And you said health, because you're a genius.
And that's well, I can't wait to get the humbleness because you keep feeding my ego.
Exactly right.
That's an everyday struggle.
Yeah,
I mean, you keep feeding that ego.
Well,
but thank you.
Yeah, we're just so thankful that you're here, and we're so excited to listen and to learn, and again, just really appreciative that you would be willing to trust and to continue to build bridges of trust. And I don't know if we can do anything unless we start with that. So thank you for willing to risk and to trust. And we're just so thankful for that. So excited to hear what you have to share today.
Thank you. Yeah. Trust in leadership is very important. It's very important because, you know, you think about past histories and past pains and past traumas and stuff you create that's not really there. Trust in leadership, whatever it may be. Yeah, that's a, to rebuild it, that's a tough one. It takes a lot of work. And yeah, it's gotta be community-based, like you said. Got to be community-based, working together. Yaya still is working together. So, I know, and when people always talk about reconciliation and, you know, restoration, it has to be with trust. has to be with trust. Sometimes we never get there, right? And well, I always say with reconciliation, or you have to surprise us. Surprise me, or surprise yourself. And, you know, I never thought I would be here speaking in a church as an indigenous man, based on what has happened to my mother and everyone at Kwantlen, right? It's hard for, even though I live beside that church. You know, that takes a lot of trust to be happy to stay there. You know, even with our, you know, even with your communities and your leaders, you know, I have trust in our hereditary chief, in our matrilineal ways, in our matriarchy ways, that these are teachings that we have kept on for over 20,000 years. Right? That's a long time. Trust in that, you know, that we don't have a democracy at the moment, but maybe that might be introduced later in the future. I'm not sure. Maybe some members. So yeah, put your trust in a democracy that was created by a patriarchy from a different area. Right? And you know, a lot of people struggle with that too, with like a trust in democracy. I ask myself that question. I'm like, why did it take 402 years for the matriarchy to make its appearance at the White House? Right? A black woman, an Asian woman, you know, she's just a few heartbeats away from becoming the true matriarch of America. It's not that she's not that far away. She's just a few ticks away. So why did it take so long for America to get to that point? You know, trust, that's a big one. And everything that I see that's going on down there is what we have been working on, and how we're so lucky to have these, that we're so close by.
Right.
Yeah, literally. You know, you can see my house from the bridge. You know, I see you guys every day with your family. You know the sound of my horn.
Sarah was just saying, actually, she's like, I feel like Luke hasn't driven past us recently.
I know.
I think that happened a lot more in the summer.
Yeah. It's true. So, yeah, and it's, you got to look towards the leadership on both sides. And that's what Kwantlen has been working on with the school district, right? To looking on the right leaderships on and work on the dark histories of the past. And, you know, acknowledging that and being, having the leaders and the professionals and ready for whatever may come about. I just had this conversation with the administrations at one of my school about how we're going to, not only are we going, not only do I do my Hunkaminam message, like a welcome, I welcome people onto the landed territory, and I use like a Hunkaminam word of the week. So, but we're also going to be reading like little tidbits, like a short story from Richard Wagamese. And because he's really great at short stories. And some of the stuff is very pressing, but it's also very true. You know, it deals about him being, you know, in a foster family, or being abused by his parents, or having a foster father die of cancer, but how that father connected him to the land as a six-year-old boy. They call it the language of fishermen. But they were, you know, just out by the water. The six-year-old boy, who was that was his foster father, was taking care of him, and knew that as a young Ojibwe boy, he needed to connect to the land and the water. And so he would take him out on the boats And they would just experience that as a father and a young man. So a lot of these kids in our community don't have that opportunity. But he knew that Richard needed to be by that water so he could experience what it is to be as an Ojibwe person, or what a Christian can be when they need to be by that water for the same holy, sacred reasons. And, you know, he was, his foster father died of cancer probably about 3 years later, and he was adopted by another family. And when he just went out to the land and the water, and he, you know, his tears fell on the ground in the grass. But it wasn't tears of sadness, it was tears of gratitude of how that man helped him reconnect him as an Ojibwe person, or as a person who needed that healing, even though as he continued to hurt. So when you read stuff like that out loud, but also keep it clear and concise and to the point, you also need to be prepared for what may happen. And that's what I expressed to the administrators. I said, yeah, we can read this, we can talk about cancer, we can talk about foster parents, we can talk about abuse, we can talk about even being Native. But we need to have these professionals standing by, which we do. Because we don't know what kind of trauma is going to come about or how someone will react to that. And that's what it's like being an Indigenous person. You know, when you deal with such trauma and pain and you know, and misery of just trying to survive. That's, you know, you never know what will trigger your brain. And I gave the example to the principal and the vice principal, and I said, years ago when we had our Orange Shirt Day assembly, it was in the gym, and there was probably like 1,100 people in there, but it was like a pin drop. And they were so respectful and so polite, so empathetic. And no one was rude and no one was silly, but the silence triggered my mom. But that's what we would want, right? You would want people to be quiet and respectful, but the silence was overbearing. For my mom, and she triggered some traumas from residential schools, because when everyone would sleep at night, people were too scared to cry or ask for mommy or ask for daddy or the brothers and sisters, because they knew that they would get beaten, so they were just quiet, and that kind of triggered her childhood of laying down in that bed, listening to that silence. So you never know what that trauma will come or how it's going to affect your health. You just got to know that we have the community here to support them. And I said, that's what we need to be prepared for. And it's also going to create a lot of opportunities for discussion from Richard Wagami's work. And maybe just the experience of being Indigenous or being from a targeted community. This is the conversation we need to have open for these children and staff too. And that's how we're going to learn more about our Indigenous communities. It's through story, and we're going to create this friendship and trust of knowing that, hey, we can count on you and you can count on us. That's what really, you know, reconciliation feels like to me. And it's not coming through, you know, stuff that you may think is helping us when we actually really don't care about it, right? That's where the survival comes into play, right? That's where I have that. Years and years ago, I talked about the res versus urban, res versus urban natives. And this was just about how natives who live on reserve, they know where they're from, they know their name, they know their teachings, they know their culture, but they also have to deal with that everyday trauma of being there.
Right.
And the stigma of people, downplaying us or being rude to us or being ignorant to us. We have to deal with that online, in person, in this area. You know, those thoughts are always in the back of your head where you're lacking in trust. Like, can I trust this person? And then there's the urban natives too, where a lot of them don't know where they're from. They self-identify. Maybe they do know they're native, but they won't acknowledge it. They don't want to be a part of it. Maybe they're ashamed. Maybe they're ashamed of being native, or maybe they're ashamed of being successful. Right? I had people tell me that too. Here I am, a successful, wealthy person living in a fabulous area. I am very well off, but yet my family is on the reserve struggling.
Right.
Can I return home?
Right.
What resentment will that bring amongst family? And or maybe like urban natives too, who are from a different area, you know, maybe they're upset that they can't be with their community. They can't, or they miss their family. They're kind of lacking in that community guidance, right? From their own family, or maybe the community itself, right? So that's why we're so lucky to have Kwantlen and you guys. We have that leadership that we can trust, which is, you know, that's a tough one to come about, to know that, hey, these are good people and I want to be with them, right? That's just simple friendship. That's a real good neighbor. So yeah, the health is it's a real tough one, because everyone's going to have a different view on it, right? Some might think it'd be like just, you know, eating healthy or exercising, or maybe that I'm slim and not overweight. But to us, it just means to create breath, right? To create breath. If you're breathing, that's good.
Right.
If you're breathing, that's good. We're happy. But if you're struggling, hey, we got the trust from our community all around, and the leadership and the trust to say, hey, we know what to do. We have stories and experiences that will help you feel somewhat better. Right? Like that, I learned that with my mom when she had to have her hip replacement. I learned that real quick. You got to put trust in things that you're scared of. Like, I was scared of hospitals, Western medicine, you know, indigenous people going into hospitals. That's scary stuff. During a pandemic, you know, and I'm working full time in two large schools. It's tough to try to survive or want to be present, right? It's tough to worry about your health. And then you start to see people who are really honest and sincere and really care and love their job, passion. And, you know, they're just there to be kind and caring, to make sure that everything feels good. And then you see that, you know, there are changes in technology. that it's very impressive. Mm. And the different areas of a hospital that help to make the community a good place. Mm. Even though you have that thoughts in your back of your head, right? Yeah. About not wanting to trust them. But you're worried about that person's health, but if they can just breathe to get through it, we can work together through the pain and misery and trauma to feel somewhat better, you know, day by day. So that's what I had to learn with mom's health. And then when you finally overcome that and return home, and then you're with your community, that's when you start to see yourself, you start to worry about your own health too, right? I read in a CBC article about how they would view not only the patient as invisible, but the caretaker as an invisible patient too. Mm. So the caretaker, like myself, I felt invisible within my community. But I shouldn't have felt that way, because I knew that I could trust people there. So here I am creating thoughts of resentment in my head of why can't others help me out?
Right.
But these are people I know and love.
Yeah.
This is my family. And it took a lot of grappling with my mental health of wanting to be seen, of wanting to be heard, even though, you know, everyone cares and loves for mom so much, right? But you're still like, why aren't they here helping out, right? You get angry, and also tiredness, you get very tired, probably don't eat well. That contributes to a lot of things, right? It's like a checklist. So that would, I feel like once I overcame that, you know, I feel like a little sense of hope and pride and passion. That's what, like, being Native is about too, eh? It's like, am I going to get home? Will I get home? And what's going to happen when I get home? Because it's not going to be the same view of when you get there. It's going to be different. That's like when we return home from residential schools. Mm. You're happy to get home, but when you get home, it was ugly. Mm. When mom came home after 48 years of being away, yeah, everyone else was kind of in their own bubble. She only connected with one sister. So that's where you gotta, where I feel is that in order to work on your health, you need your culture, you need your family, your ancestors. You need to be by that water. A living water, that's a living organism, place of healing. Those are where our songs come from, right? That's where people get baptized, right down the same place. And how, what great joy that brings to people. Calmness. That's an everyday struggle, is to try to find calmness. And if you can find that, that's a little bit of healing right there. That's good for your health. And yeah, that's why Richard Wagamese always talked about, he always writes a lot about quietness and how it's different. But for my mother, it was different. That was like a traumatic event. But for him, it was nice. So you need the culture, the drumming, the singing, that beautiful sockeye salmon. It's a place of abundance, right? I remember I would come here and listen to Living Waters talk about a place of abundance. And all the people who would help others. We used to come from a place of abundance too. And that's changed. Maybe it'll change again. And then you can come to us for help. That'd be a beautiful day. I was like, get over here, brother. How's Man United doing? Not so good again, is it? Can't wait till your kids are grown up. Your kids are grown up. Happy anniversary of Liverpool beating Barcelona 4-3. Come on, Luke. I'm 43 years old. Can you drop it already? It's going to be like moments of that.
Yeah.
That's going to be, you know, we can celebrate beautiful moments. That's just friendship. Mm. That's what I tell people who want to talk to me about reconciliation. Mm. You know, it's about friendship.
Yeah.
And remembering, and last time I talked about, let's hear about your friend's story. You know, so when I do my intro, you know, misap kutwilam tana tamo kwatlin tayi, tanitsin a kwatlin, you know, welcome to the land and territory. This is Kwatlin. I am from Kwatlin. Our goal is to welcome you. And we've been doing that forever. We want to make sure you feel comfortable and welcomed, which I know you guys are great at doing that too. But some people, like the urban, I don't know who came up with this urban teaching of acknowledging land, right? Acknowledging land, that makes us feel uncomfortable. Like, how am I, what am I supposed to be thankful? Oh yeah, thank you. I know, I live there. Thanks. It's like that, you know, John Travolta, you know, gif where he's like this. He's like, kind of looks confused.
Right.
Oh, the land acknowledged, all right, let me go with that. So it makes us uncomfortable. And I talk about this with, you know, our elders too. My mom, my uncles. These are some very angry people who are just trying to survive. We're trying to breathe out here, especially wintertime. Wintertime is a terrible time. It's a terrible time. Right now with COVID, because we're seeing a lot of COVID fatigue.
Yeah.
And especially in, it's like terrible now in indigenous communities too. Because they're thriving for their culture. Just like people online right now are thriving to be here in the church. They want that so bad. Where some are even going to go and defy it. And, you know, the natives have done it too. And, you know, when you do that, you're going to get sick. And they have got sick. And it's spreading. And then, yeah, it starts to take a toll on your mind and you get a little ignorant. And you become, you know, people just love to argue. That fatigue is kicking in. And that's what we're seeing now with the virus. Right? You know, there's not one case down the road from us. We hit that head.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, and that's just coming from the children. The children wanted that gate up. It's been up there since March 25th. Since the year of the Black Plague, 2020. So, it's, you know, when you need that, it's tough, especially when people are dying and you can't be with them. But you choose to be with them, it takes an incredible toll on one's mental health, right? And I told that to mom. I was like, yeah. She's like, these people are playing with God. That's what she told me. These people are playing with God. I'm like, wow. It was like even our medicine women, medicine, like our shaman, they should know better, but they don't. So they're just struggling to breathe. Just another part of the struggle and trauma, right? I always think about the different ways we have struggled to breathe over hundreds and thousands of years. But the way that we work together with our culture and our ways and our communities to survive. to keep that fire burning in a good way and sometimes in a non-negative way, right? I would always think, yeah, from the fires that would be in our longhouse, you know, to the fires that burn in the alleys of the downtown east side. 80% of that population is native. And they know exactly where they're from. But they are struggling. And they're having a hard time breathing. Having a hard time with their health. And, you know, that fire in their lungs, just like with tuberculosis, with my auntie. She spent 7 years in the hospital with tuberculosis as a kid, because she contracted from residential school. And that's where my house is built, where her house used to be. So that tree out by my house in my backyard is where she used to clean her fish. So it's like a daily reminder of, and then my cousins and their everyday struggle, right? Of just surviving, but ways that we can make them happy and kind of bring them back to that core of being a child. So I think about all those difficult moments of what it's like to be a native, from tuberculosis to being in the downtown east side to, you know, men lighting up cigarettes with fire as they pick up women on the Highway of Tears, to whatever else fire-related events might happen. That's why we need to get it back to the longhouse. So it's a tough one, but music, culture, that will bring our healing, or at least work on it a little bit, right? That's why I love music so much. I just want to be re-educated every single time with every record I put on the turntable. It's an incredible ritual. Did I tell you I just bought new fancy DJ needles? Put those on. So good. It's like kind of like a bump. Bump, bump. You know that little noise when you put that record on? Never gets old. And sometimes people need that bump in their life to get through. That was going to be okay. Right? And I always look at records and music, it's like a broken avenue of dreams, right? Every time you put on that record, you know, you're bringing that story back. You're bumping them into their experience of signing that record. Like, what if I came and tell you, like, look, I just signed a record deal. Isn't this great? And then probably 10 years, like, six sold. That's a broken avenue of dreams.
Right.
But every time I put that back on, it's a beautiful thing. It brings me to that moment. I'm like, how did they get to that point of pain and suffering? And I get to listen to it all the time. And that's what I love about music, about our culture, about being by that water, about being with our friends, about learning about trust is knowing that, hey, you know what's going to be okay, even though I'm not feeling the best today. But people are willing to listen to my story and to know that my story contains value, and that I can listen to their story too, and that they're my friends, and that I can trust them. And that they're going to surprise me in some way, right? That's what I like. Yeah, so even if we look at our friends in America, right? 402 years Last time I wore my Spike Lee hoodie, it says our ancestor, 1619.
Yeah.
That was the time that the black men, 90% of the men who left Africa were men. Mm. Black men. That was Plan B. Mm. Right? Because the settlers in America couldn't kill off the native men. Mm. We were too strong. Mm. We just knew how to survive. Mm. We knew how to continue to breathe. We knew how to focus on our health. And that was through our culture and drumming and singing. Mm. And our ways of living by the land and hunting and working together and entering a psychedelic way of standing up against those who are oppressing us and going through it. We didn't even have guns. Mm. We would use our chants of crying and pain and sorrow. And we would release those songs up to the sky and to the water, to the grass, to the land. And it freaked out the settlers. Mm. Even when they would shoot us. Mm. They would shoot us. And we were still there. Mm. And we would use our songs as a way to cry. Or even if we did that, we would cry. And that's what you call singing the blues. Right? Those are songs that we sing in our longhouse. Mm. Of singing the blues, that's our way of trying to heal or stand up against those who continue to oppress us, mm. continue to downplay our way of life, mm. or think down upon us mm. for who we are as Native people. Mm. But we can stand up and sing and dance and eat and be with our elders, and be with our ancestors. And sometimes our friends will be there, mm. right? See, it's a rare occurrence for friends to come to our longhouse, right? Because it's a very personal experience. Mm. So that's what we call singing the blues. We've been singing the blues for over 20,000 years. And that's how blues music started, was through our native ways of life. So they went to Plan B, and that's when they brought in the slaves from Africa along the east coast of America. And one way you do that, you want to confuse people, is you displace them. Mm. Displace native men. And you displace the Africans from Africa, and you bring them to a place where they will not feel included. Mm. They will not be at the table. And you're going to put them in a terrible area. You're going to introduce illnesses to them, viruses to them, alcohol, dependency, all stuff that they're scared of. And you're going to just teach them how to survive, and that's it. And they're going to create a lot of anger and fear and resentment and something that they don't believe in, right? You're going to take away their songs, their culture, their families, and their name, and where they're from. They have no clue where they're from. It's like the perfect crime. And there they are. So here they are with the black men trying to have, they will have children with Native women, because they've displaced Native men all around North America. And then when people want to claim something, like a land claim, and these people are black, but claim to be Native, you know the politicians are going to laugh in their face. Mm. So you can't claim nothing, you can't settle nothing. Mm. You can't live anywhere, mm. except in this area where we want you to live.
Right.
And then we won't support you. We won't let you breathe. We're going to shoot you. Mm. And then you're not going to be able to trust the police. You're going to suffer from a lot of police brutality. Mm. You're going to suffer from resenting your own community. Mm. You're going to create this invisible illusion of something that's not even there. Is democracy there? The patriarchy there? Do you believe in that? It's a wild, wild thing. So there you have the black man with the native people. And then they would get together and they would use their culture and their way of life, food, drumming, singing, music, as a way to help themselves just to survive and to continue to breathe. And this is where the only time you could see a black man in feathers drumming and singing. Hmm. A black man in feathers drumming and singing. That's what you call a Mardi Gras. Hmm. You know, natives and black people created the Mardi Gras. Hmm. Nowadays, it's different. Hmm. It's very, very different. America kind of screwed that up too. They screwed that up big time. It's very appalling and rude what goes on at Mardi Gras now. But the real Mardi Gras is in the rough area. You go to the roughest area of New Orleans in a shack. Look for a black man in feathers, drumming and singing. That's where you have jazz music. Natives and blacks created that jazz music as a way to help survive. And that's why I love music so much and culture so much, because I can relate to it. I feel like maybe I have some black ancestry in me that I don't know about. Maybe. I think that's probably why I have so many African records. I think it might be a close up to over 100, maybe more. Hmm. I'll check my Discogs when I get home. Then you create these areas of where people can't trust leadership at all. At all. And then you want to preach about reconciliation, right? But yet we can't even trust them. So that's why, even with hip hop music too, right? I was like, how did these people create these incredible records when they can't even afford instruments? They're just sampling records. That's why I buy records, so I'm looking for that perfect sample, that perfect breakbeat. Mm. Comes from, you know, a lot of great sampling comes from gospel records too. Mm. There's a lot of crazy breakbeats in gospel too. Mm. That sampled through that. So then you start to see, you know, native people and black people just continuing to struggle with their health. History is very predictable, right? Because it just keeps repeating itself. From Rodney King to George Floyd, right? That's why I think it really hit the nail on the head with health when he said, I can't breathe. Mm. I can't breathe. But yet health from us means you need to breathe. Mm. But he didn't. Mm. Even if George Floyd survived, it would not be pretty. Because that's what happened with Rodney King. Mm. That was a terrible struggle. Terrible, terrible struggle. And how his life was so tragic after. Mm. It would have been the same with George Floyd. And I had a teacher from Trinity Western come up to me, and she wanted me to talk about heroes in fantasies, but from a Kwantlen First Nation perspective. I was like, this is great timing, and thank you for asking me. Heroes are people who don't plan to be heroes. Mm. These are people who are just trying to breathe and survive. Like George Floyd didn't plan to be a hero. Mm. That man was just trying to breathe and survive. And I knew he probably led a very troubled life. Mm. It showed. Mm. But when his daughter said that, you know, my daddy's a hero now. Mm. He didn't plan to be a hero. these nurses didn't plan to be a hero. I'm sure they're struggling. You read it in the news, you hear it on the news, man. They probably have a lot of resentment and pain and anger. I don't think they feel like a hero. So heroes are people who are just here to survive and breathe. Those are our elders, right? See, when we come to the conclusion of this series, you're going to see there's only one person who can follow all seven. Only one person. It's not us. It's not you. It's not me. It's not Reuben. It's not anyone who's ever come to this building. It's our elders. Our elders are the ones, because they had to fight so hard to survive, even though they struggle. So I think about that. And then I think about, you know, Canada being a myth of origin too. Do natives believe in Canada? You know, we struggle with that. People struggle with us still being here too, I bet. So it works both ways. It's maybe, it really comes down to your friendship and what you believe in and who you trust and who you love. Do you trust a democracy and a patriarchy where it's very hard to overcome police brutality, you know, smallpox, tuberculosis, corporations, right? You know, I lived on Hudson Bay Street. I can see Hudson Bay from my front yard. These are like daily reminders. Can we deal with these corporations? You know, it takes a lot to wrap your mind of overcoming that. It really triggers your mental health, right? That's what people who, when you talk about mental health today, you gotta really work around things that don't exist, right? That's what I'm trying to tell my mom too, right? But she knows the love is there, and the prayers are there. And the community is there. And I think that's what the most beautiful thing is about health, is being there with your neighbors and your brother and your sisters, sharing those songs, being by the water, trying to find that calmness, and just breathing together. It's a powerful thing, a very powerful thing through music and culture and how it can bring us there. You know, people ask me about what's your favorite record, and I say, it doesn't exist, because I'm always trying to find one better than the other. And then once I find that record, what can I do that's better than this one? And it just feels so good when you get to them, you're like, what is this? Let me learn more about this story. I want to hear about this story. I want to listen to it over and over again. That's what people need to do here. Listen to our stories over and over again. Residential schools or being indigenous, not knowing where you're from. I know there was a lady at the fort. She spoke to me after Mom and I spoke at a reconciliation event, and she, you know, we always hear a lot, I'm sorry. And then we get really tired of hearing that, because how are we supposed to react to that? I'm sorry for what happened to you, right? Or what happened to your ancestors in there. I was like, okay, I heard that before. And then she said, I'm wearing my dress right now. It was a red, black, and white one, like native colors. It was a button blanket. She says, for every story I've heard about residential schools, I've sewn on a button. And now the button's way too heavy on my shoulders, just like the stories that I've heard are way too heavy on my shoulders and my spirit. And I said, and now after I heard your mom's story, I'm going to sew a nut and button on. It'll be the 133rd button. And that surprised me, because that's what I want to hear. I want to be surprised. Then she surprised me again of something I never heard anyone tell me. She says, I'm sorry for what we continue to do to you. Like, wow. Because she was sharing the truth. And that was beautiful. And I thanked her very much for that. So, yeah, when we're thinking about our health, just knowing where you're from and what your name is can do wonders, right? And can bring a little bit of light to a dark tunnel. It can return you home. That can return you to a place you need to be. That's beautiful. And it's as simple as knowing your name and where you're from and welcoming. That's why I love to welcome people on to Kwantlen instead of acknowledging something that is only a myth of origin to me. Very deep. Just like the music. Well, I think I'll end with that. Unless you have some questions or comments, concerns.
Well, thank you, first of all. And if you've got questions and you're listening, feel free to type them in. I've got one or two to start with. And they will end up in this magic box in front of me.
Fancy.
Yeah. But I think the question that I kept coming back to as I listened was a theme that I heard all throughout what you shared, was this sense of healing, or health rather. Health is really only possible in community. That being an individual and trying to find health is not really possible. It's in community. That's where it starts. And then that community is able to work through questions, is able to listen, is able to embrace music, and all the ways towards healing begin with finding yourself within community. And I guess the question I would ask related to that then is, what do you think stops people from finding their way into community in order to then find health? You know, if community's the embracing community is the gateway in towards further health, what stops people from moving into that? What's been your experience of that?
Yeah, it's a tough one of what would stop someone. You know, there's, like I said, that kind of goes back to the, you know, there might be some stigmas, there might be some stereotypes there. You know, the media doesn't help. Media is really good at focusing on very negative stuff.
Yeah, assumptions we carry about one another.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to really get out there and overcome those fears and to know that, hey, this is a great area and what I have thought about them was completely wrong. And these are great people. But there's still a few, you know, mishaps.
Yeah.
I think that's just with any job trait.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be people who are in it for the wrong reasons. People, that's where people will get a little, you know, hesitant.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's just got to be a love for someone.
Yeah.
You know, a passion to just surprise yourself.
Yeah,
I never thought I'd be doing home care, but I didn't think 2 seconds about it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think about being in a hospital during a pandemic, but I was there every single day for months.
Yeah.
While working full time.
Yeah.
And cleaning two houses.
Yeah, It's a lot.
It's a lot. So.
Well, it takes courage too to step mm-hmm. into those things and like to risk community, to risk being vulnerable, to risk giving the benefit of the doubt. And so the question I'd ask of the risk of community that takes courage, what is courage to you?
Courage to me is honoring someone.
Hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you're nervous about doing something, hmm. you need to think about someone who you want to honor hmm. in your family so you can overcome that.
Right.
Or, yeah, like I said, you kind of create this illusion that's not there. Just like how maybe you don't believe in it, right? That's where I think of, you know, certain areas where I don't believe in. But I'm a part of it, right? Like, Native people struggle with being a citizen of Canada. And with good reason. It takes a lot to want to, but there's going to be people who are going to help you get through that. Like Gord Downie was one of those. Gord Downie was one of those. Especially during Canada 150. It was like some good timing. And just sharing their story, like how he shared Gordy Chani Wenjack's story. That's just, that's a Kenora, Ontario. That was a small town. In fact, how he would honor that, honor their family during his most difficult time in his life. That's what I tell my students too. I say, why are you here? Who are you doing this work for? You need to, maybe you want to honor your mom, your dad, your grandma, your grandpa. Why are you here in Canada? Are you happy to be here in Canada? Is it for a good reason, a successful reason, right?
So is there a sense then of the way towards risking community
mm-hmm.
is to recognize that you've come from
yes.
community?
And you have to know.
You're just carrying that baton so that it can continue.
Yeah, and you have to know.
Health is made possible that way.
Yeah, you have to be comfortable enough about saying where you're from and what your name is.
Yeah.
You know, some people change their names when they come here. Because people can't pronounce it. Mm. We've dealt with the same thing before. Mm. So, yeah, it's going to be a different story for every person, but they have to understand that their story contains value, yeah. equal value,
yeah.
even if they don't feel that way. Mm. Or maybe they've been silenced,
yeah.
marginalized, mm. humiliated, mm. right? Takes a lot of work to, or maybe they were just with someone, they were carrying someone's name who made them very sick. Mm. You see that a lot. Mm. About how people get married, mm. and then they get a divorce. Mm. They get married, they get divorced. And you see what kind of illness that name that they hold. Mm. The name is what makes them sick. They're carrying that person's name they can't trust. Mm. Makes them sick. Mm. Just like if I was rude or ignorant or did something terrible within my community, they would take away my name and ask me to leave the community. Mm. Right? Mm. It can happen. It has happened. Mm. It continues to happen. Mm. So, yeah, but you gotta continue to love them and care for them. And that's what the church here is really good at. Yeah, that's when we'll look into forgiveness.
Yeah.
The toughest thing you ever have to do.
Well, we do what we can. I mean, part of it is when it comes to forgiveness and to trying to care is to recognize how much you need it in the first place. I mean, mm-hmm. that's really the beginning of it, of putting up your hand and saying that the church is not here to proclaim that it's right. The church is actually here to proclaim that it's wrong. That's mm-hmm. why we need that thing. That's mm-hmm. why we need to say we're people who are able to say we're wrong, and we need grace, and we need forgiveness, and we have to start there. But another question that I had about health that some of your comments just spurred on for me was this question of, for you personally, in this traditional law of health, what in the last couple of years has become increasingly significant for you, or an area of growth that you've seen in yourself, that you've embraced further health? Would you be willing to share? It's kind of an intimate question, but
yeah.
I'd be appreciative if there's anything you'd share about that specifically.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, you gotta look at the changes of technology. Mm. You gotta think about past history. You gotta think about my auntie. Mm. You know, think about others who continue to struggle on a daily basis mm. of living on a reserve.
Yeah.
And the pain that comes from there. Mm. I think about the success stories of overcoming that incredible pain mm. and trauma, but still living with it. Mm. And I think about this vaccine mm. and how that's changed my view. Mm. But yet people still feel a little bit funny about it. Mm. But here's a native saying they want it.
Right.
We say we want it because we're thinking about our aunties
yeah.
and our elders. Mm. And that's why we want it. Because we want to honor them and we love them and we care for them. And my Auntie Mary didn't have that choice.
Yeah.
I think about, could that vaccine save her if it was offered at a residential school? Why did she have to spend 7 years in the hospital? Mm. And how it impacted her life. Mm. I think about that. Mm. I think about how it destroyed her soul. And the soul that sat at the edge of a corner just down the street mm. every single day. Mm. But she was still breathing. And that I live on the same grounds where she cleaned that fish. Mm. Could it have changed my cousin's life? Mm. You know, I think about that. I think about my mom's struggles as a residential school survivor, but the way she is as a warrior. You know, I think about my connection to the land and being by the water. I think about my friendships and rebuilding of trust. I think about how surprised I am I'm going to be this year and where it's going to lead me. I'm going to be working in an area where I never thought I would be or that I would be capable of working in. Mm. And I think I can make it happen. Mm. That's reconciliation. Mm. I want to be a place where I never expected to be, but I deserve to be. Because I want to be there. Because I need to share these stories. And people need to hear them. Mm. And it shouldn't be people from outer areas talking about it in this area. It should be us.
Right.
It should be us welcoming you mm. onto the land and territory and making sure you feel comfortable. And it should not be people acknowledging something that's already been here. Mm. But what actions are they going to do if they acknowledge it? Mm. What further actions are they going to do? Mm. They ain't going to do nothing. Mm. Right? That's what I think about for health. Mm. I think it's about just staying here, mm. right? That's a good one.
Yeah.
I think about Liverpool winning the league again.
Staying.
I think about an Everton drought.
Staying.
1995.
Here. And those victories. Well, I think I can say again, Luke, that you are a person of deep welcome, deep calm and presence. And maybe there's times where you don't feel that way, but you always mm. bring that into a room. And so thank you for welcoming us today and being willing to share again today. And for exploring today, I think health feeling quite complex and interconnected and willing to go where you felt like you needed to go today, and I saw that happening. So thank you for being willing to be vulnerable mm-hmm. and to share that. And as we continue to create these sorts of spaces, I think we're longing for the day where we can do this together, physically in a room with people. So the fact that you're willing to still do this in this way through the magic of the internet, but to hold to what we're doing together, it just does mean so much. So thank you on behalf of the church for being willing to
do awesome. That. Yeah, no, I always think, would we do this? Would people actually come to hear me speak?
They would.
They would?
Yep.
Okay, I'll go with about, what, 6 to 8?
We'll have to see what will it look like when we're
will we have like, can I get like live musicians in here?
I think there's a good potential for that, absolutely.
I need some music in my life.
You should throw Ricky on a guitar in the background behind you.
Maybe, not bad. How low can you go?
Right on. Well, thanks again.
You're welcome.
And we pay our dues to Ruben, who is serving us as well behind the scenes. So thank you again, Ruben. And thanks for joining us, if you've been joining us live. And if you're listening to this on the podcast, you can expect to hear other talks on our podcast as well as we kind of continue through our We Are Kwantlen journey and with Luke. And thanks for joining us. And we will catch you next time. I believe the next time we're sitting down...
February 25th.
February 25th was the date we chose, and we'll go from there. Any leanings towards where you think we'll go next in our next conversation? We don't have to commit to it now, but I'd be interested what you'd say off the cuff.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, because February 22nd is the anniversary of my dad's passing. So, yeah, we'll think about something with that.
Something connected.
It's not coming to me yet.
That's okay. We'll give it time to stew.
But yeah, no, it's always... Yeah, the 22nd is, a day that I dread and my mom dread, but yeah. I know I also have a very good friend, her birthday's on the 23rd.
Yeah.
So I was like, what a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Yeah, February 23rd is a great day because it's after the 22nd.
Yeah, there you have it.
And then I get to celebrate my friend's birthday.
Yeah.
And how they were brought into my life.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Community is a good thing.
It's a great thing.
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
Well, thanks again, Luke. Thanks, Ruben. Thank you for joining us. And we will catch you next time on Grow. And stay safe. As my friend likes to say, stay positive, test negative. We'll see you next time.
That's great news.